Tonight's shiur is dedicated to Nishmas Avram Yitzchak ben Yaakov. We now come to the conclusion of Sefer Bereishis, Parshas Vayechi. And really, more than just the end of Sefer Bereishis, it's really the conclusion of the building and the forming of Shiftei Ka, the 12 Shvatim. And really, more than anything, it's really the forming of Bnei Yisrael. This Sefer predominantly discussed the how we became a nation, or you could say maybe even differently, how we became a family, because the Shiftei Ka had there, like every good family, had a lot of internal politics. And this was the conclusion. This parsha really sums up, and we really finish after this week's parsha discussing the individuality of the Shiftei Ka and the Bnei Yisrael, and then we'll go into discussing Bnei Yisrael as an entire nation and how we deal with the opposition. Another way of looking at it is Sefer Bereishis, there was a lot of internal conflict. And we're going to get to Sefer Shemaris, at least in the beginning of it, we're going to be dealing with no longer internal conflict, we're going to be dealing with external conflict. We're going to be dealing with oppression, not from inside, but oppression from the outside world, which is what we're dealing with today in both layers. We deal with internal conflict in our Jewish world. We have our Sinas Chinam problem. And sadly enough, we're living with some very, very difficult anti-Semitic from the outside. Not from the inside, from the outside of the Jewish world, we're dealing with hatred as well. So that's really the conclusion of Sefer Bereishis. Again, we know in this week's parasha, we're going to have the passing of Yaakov, which is another end of an era. He was the last of the Avos, the third of the great Avos that we know of, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, each one giving us a different amud that we stand on. We know each one gave us something that the world stands on. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov each give us. Avram is chesed, Yitzchak is avoida, which is tefillah, but Yaakov gave us perhaps the most important thing, and that is Torah. Yaakov represents Torah, and we know the Mishnah says, what's the order? Torah, v'avoida, gimel chesedim, we've explained in the past, in the name of Rabbi Chana Wasserman, the world can exist if there was no davening, the world can exist if there was no chesed, the world can never exist with no Torah. What Yaakov left us, his Messiah for us is his Torah, and that Torah is essential for our survival. And if there'd ever be a moment in the world where there'd be no one learning Torah anywhere in this entire globe, the entire world would cease to exist. We mentioned, I think, on the Sunday morning share that that MetLife Stadium that housed the Siyam HaShas was built for only one reason. It was built for the purpose so we can have a Siyam HaShas every 7.5 years. I didn't know this, but someone told me that there was a big meeting when they were discussing the first Siyam HaShas in MetLife, which was 14 years ago, and the contractor who was there with the two owners of the football teams, which were all Jews, of course, and they were discussing that they were going to have the Siyam HaShas 14 years ago in MetLife Stadium, and the contractor said the following. He said, you know, I spent 10 years building this stadium with your people's money, meaning Jewish money, and he said, I never realized that this is my purpose in life. Like, this is my calling. I spent 10 years building this stadium. For what? So every Sunday we can lose a football game. The Jets and the Giants are not very good teams. So he said, what's my calling in life? And then he said, when I realized that you're going to use this stadium for this massive Jewish event, I realized that now this building was not for naught. It wasn't for nothing. It was so you can be Mekadosh Shem Hashem. This is from the guy, from the contractor 14 years ago. So again, Torah is what we live on today. It's what fuels us and what keeps us going, and it's essential for us, and that we got from Yaakov Avinu. But Yaakov is going to pass in this week's parasha, and that's going to set into motion the next phase of Jewish history, which is going to be Sefer Shemois, and our first massive gullus that we experience, that we deal with, Mr. Shem Blineda, we'll get to it, not Parshas Shmois, Parshas Veira, my famous theory, and I'll prove it to you, as I've done in the past, in the similarities between Gullus of Egypt and Gullus of the Holocaust, the similarities between what Pari did and what Hitler did, but this is really what the Ramban tells us, Maisa of a similar bottom, everything that happens in these parashiyas are merely giving us a heads up what will happen and what has already have happened in history. So Gullus is not something new to us, we are still living in it, but we'll show the parallels, but none of this could begin until Yaakov dies and ultimately all the Shvatim die, then we go into the new phase of Gullus. Yaakov gets ready for death. We know the Medrash tells us Yaakov was the first person to experience a sickness. No one else ever got sick before Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu davened and asked Hashem, please give us sickness, because sickness, although it sounds crazy, but sickness is a blessing. The person just dies suddenly. He has no time to prepare himself or his family for his passing. He has no ability to give over parting words to his family, what he wants and what he doesn't want. When a person gets sick, he gives him the chance to give over to his family, to himself, to prepare himself and his family for death. And Yaakov Avinu was the first one to have that. Then Yaakov Avinu gives the blessings in this week's parasha. And as we'll discuss hopefully tonight in more depth, that these brachas were not merely for Yaakov's children, but they were really lessons for all of us. The messages and the lessons that Yaakov departed to his children were not merely a one-time experience for the Reuven, the Shimon, and the Levi, but they are messages, timely messages for all of us. And we'll see how they all pertain to our lives in Klal Yisrael as a nation. To me, there are two major themes that run through Parshas Vayechi. One we spoke about heavily last year. We'll just mention it in passing. And one of the very important themes are the recognition and the realization of one's purpose in this world. People spend their entire life trying to figure out, where do I fit into this massive world? Where do I fit in to this specific job? And where do I fit in to my specific role as Am Yisrael? And where do I fit in to my role as in my family? And where do I fit into my role in my community? It's a very deep question. This week's parasha has many, many references to understanding one's specific, particular role. Embrace it, master it, and don't try to do someone else's role. The worst thing in life is when you're trying to live someone else's life and not living yours. That's a very strong theme that runs through this week's parasha. And another very important theme that we're going to try to develop in this week's parasha is, this is one of the parashas where you see a very unique relationship between grandparents and grandchildren. This is the parasha where Yaakov opens up as a grandfather, and Yaakov Avinu shows us how to educate, how to form bonds, how to talk to, how to associate with, and how to build a relationship and give advice and give blessings with the second generation. We know parental relationship, that we've seen already, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, but here we're going to find a different type of relationship that the first person to my knowledge to show it is really Yaakov. Yes, we know, if we mentioned that Avram Avinu learned with Yaakov, but it wasn't that type of a relationship. The real meaningful grandparent relationship that we're going to see firsthand is going to be described by the relationship of Yaakov with Ephraim and Menashe, and hopefully we'll develop that and show the importance of that relationship as well. Rabbi Soloveitchik mentioned many times that the importance of that relationship, there should be no gap. Many people have this idea that there's a gap, what's called a generational gap. There's the parents and the children, and the grandparents are too far away, they're too far removed, they don't know how to use a smartphone, they're not cool, they're not hip, they don't have a Facebook page, so therefore they're out of the equation. And Yaakov Avinu taught us not so. Yaakov Avinu taught us that there's no gap. It's grandparents, parents, children, but there's no gap. The grandparents are essential. They should be perhaps involved very much in their children's life as well as the grandchildren, and we'll see how about to go about doing that. But before we get into the parasha, we must quote a very, very important kliyakar in the end of last week's parasha. The last pasuk in the conclusion of last week's parasha tells us, if you remember what happened in last week's parasha, last week's parasha, everything is going perfect. Yaakov is reunited with Yosef. The brothers are living in Eretz Goshen, which is Mitzrayim. Everything is great. The finances are rolling. Yosef is bringing in the money. Life is good. And the pasuk concludes at the end of last week's parasha, "Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim," and the Jews and Yisrael lived in Mitzrayim, be'eretz Goshen, in the land of Goshen. "Vayeochazu ba," and they held on to it. "Vayifru vayirbu me'od," and they multiplied and they increased many. So you read the end of Parashat Vayigash, you close the Chumash, and you say, wow, this is great news, terrific. Look what we did. Comes along the Kliyaka, and the Kliyaka writes the following statement. This entire Pasuk is Ba'ashmas B'nei Yisrael. This entire Pasuk is bemoaning a sin that the Jewish people fell into. What is it, says the Kliyaka? Because Hashem wanted us to be wanderers. He wanted us to be strangers. And we decided to become natives. Writes the Kliyaka that we got too comfortable in Mitzrayim. We forgot that our purpose in Mitzrayim was not to become natural citizens. It wasn't to become high-ranking members in the government. It wasn't to own all the big companies. It was to be a ger. It was to be an immigrant. Take whatever job they give you. Don't complain. Don't ask for too many rights. And understand your purpose and why you're here. You're not here to take over the government. You're here to be accepted. Just live and survive and realize it's some form of a punishment. Says the Kliyaka, we did not get that message. We decided we're going to be here, let's make the best of it. So they opened up 12 pizza stores and a Chinese restaurant and there were hotels, right? Everything was ran by the Jews. Says the Kliyaka, that's a mistake. And this is a mistake that we live with ad hayom hazeh in the Gullus. We forget that we are in Gullus. Gullus means that we're not supposed to be equal footing and we're not supposed to be enjoying it and we're not supposed to be wanting this to be the end? How did Poland become the name Poland? Because it was supposed to be Poland. Here we're going to stay forever. There's no reason to move. We all know the famous Meshachachma Pashas B'chukaisai. Meshachachma writes, Meshachachma lived in the mid to late 1800s, early 1900s. He was died way before Hitler ever rose to power. He writes, there's going to come a time when the world is going to say, Ki Berlin, hi Yerushalayim. Who needs to daven for Yerushalayim? Who needs Yerushalayim? Berlin is perfect. We know not so many years later, Berlin wasn't a very perfect place. So we're very guilty of this. We get very comfortable in the Gullus, and that's our nature, who we are. As Jews, we strive for greatness. So we come to a foreign land. Look what we did after the Holocaust. We came, those who survived the Holocaust with barely the shirts on their back, they came to America, they got no government handouts, they got no, you know, for Yiddish press too, on the phone, there was no government subsidization, they went out and worked hard. And what did they do? They built themselves up beautiful, they built up Moistus HaTeira, and they built themselves companies, and became very, very, they did very well for themselves. But that's what we do by nature, but the Kliyaka is reminding us that we can't lose sight of what we're here for. This is not supposed to be as enjoyable as it is, it's supposed to be a gullus, and sadly we're reminded of this over the last few months, perhaps more than usual, that we are in gullus, and being in gullus means we are subjected to the torture and the punishments and the affliction of the goyim around us, and that's the Kliyaka's idea at the end of last week's parsha. Important message, perhaps timely, this what's going on in American history, American culture, important for us not to lose sight that we are in gullus, and because we are in gullus, we are vulnerable to being attacked, not that we ask for it, nor not that the police shouldn't defend us, but it has to remind us that we are in gullus. But we open up in this week's parasha with perhaps a little bit more of an upbeat attitude. Vayichi Yaakov, Eretz Mitzrayim. Yaakov lives in Mitzrayim. Sheva Esrei Shana, 17 years. Very strange idea in the Pasuk. Why is it important for us to know how many years Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim? So he lived in 17 years, he lived 15 years, he lived 12. Who cares how many years Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim? So there's a Baal HaTurim that has two unbelievable pshatim over here. Both are found in the Medrash. The Baal HaTurim writes that Vayichi Yaakov means, you know when Yaakov really lived it up? When he really enjoyed life? So his first pshat is the word Vayichi. The word Vayichi is Gematria 34. Says the Baal HaTurim, the 17 years where he learned with Yosef before, and the 17 years now, that was the entire life of Yaakov. Yaakov's best years were those 34 years. The 17 years he learned with Yosef before Yosef got sold, and the 17 years now in Mitzrayim, that was Vayichi. That sums up Yaakov's life. So I was listening to a shiur from Rabbi Feiner. He asks a very basic question. Those were Yaakov's best years. If you had to ask someone what were Yaakov's best years, you would have thought it was his years in Shem Ve'ever. Those years he had in Shem Ve'ever, no wife, no kids, no headaches, no bills, no tuitions, and he learned 24 hours. That should have been Yaakov's best years. Yaakov's best years were, first of all, the 17 years he lived in Mitzrayim, the dirtiest, least spiritual place in the world, were Yaakov's best years. Why? So he suggested something interesting. He suggested because those years were Yaakov was single. He had no family. As much as it great as it is to be a bacher and to be able to learn, but it's a different life once a person gets married, he has a family, it's a whole different life. It's real living. It's a different life. The Gemara tells us in Yevamos, a person without a wife, without a family, he's not really living. It's not a full life. So yes, on a spiritual level, this was great for learning, but it wasn't really the best years of life. The best years of life were not until he had a family, or maybe you can even add, until he was able to give over the Torah. It's very nice that Yaakov learned, but giving over the Torah is even more pleasurable than just learning the Torah. So Yaakov learned in yeshiva, he was taking it all in. Then when he finally gave it back to Yosef, that became the years where he started to really enjoy life. Then the Medrash, the Baal HaTurim says another pshat. Vayichi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. The real life of Yaakov were these 17 years. When the family was whole and back together. That's when Yaakov really lived. When he was on the go, when he was fighting with his father-in-law and dealing, that wasn't a life. And when he was traveling, that wasn't a life. It's amazing. Which means Yaakov's best years were when he was in Mitzrayim. The dirtiest, lowest place in the world. Not Eretz Yisrael. And we know Yaakov loved Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to get back to Eretz Yisrael. But the best years when the family was together. There was unity. Everyone was getting along. There was no politics. And they were financially stable. And that's when Yaakov finally, ultimately enjoyed life. So writes the Medrash. The Medrash also says that the 17 years in this week's parasha correlates to the 17 years that we mentioned earlier. The 17 years that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim corresponds to the 17 years that Yaakov and Yosef spent together. What's the connection? So the Daz Zakenim writes, this was payback. Of course, for 17 years, Yaakov supported Yosef. So now for 17 years, the kids support the parents. So this is a remez, that for all the years the parents support their children, there's going to be a common time where it gets reversed. Now the kids have to support their parents. So writes the Das Zakenim. But Rav Moshe Bick points out in the Sefer, what's the word vayichi? And he lived. If you look in Chumash, when you describe a person where he lived, it's always vayeshev. Vayeshev Avram, vayeshev this. Why over here is it vayichi? So the answer is, according to what we're saying, it's beautiful. Because vayichi is not just where he lived, it's how he lived. It depicts his life. Not just Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim. Vayichi, his entire life, his whole chaya was in Mitzrayim. But Rav Moshe Bick has a whole idea over here where he says that Yaakov Avinu taught us a new idea. Yaakov Avinu taught us that we can keep spirituality even in a place like Mitzrayim. Vayichi Yaakov, meaning Yaakov was able to live, spiritually be alive, even in a Mitzrayim. A Mitzrayim which was, they say Mitzrayim was worse than Stoim V'Amayra. Mitzrayim was worse than Stoim V'Amayra. And Yaakov was able to live. What does it mean live? It means spirituality was able to grow, was able to flourish, even in a place like Mitzrayim. How? So Moshe Bick writes, it survived through Emes. We know Yaakov embodied the Midah of Emes. Through Emes and Torah, you can live even in a place like Mitzrayim. And therefore, he explains the famous Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim says that Yaakov Avinu thought that now is the time to tell the children when Mashiach is going to come. And he tried to, and the Wi-Fi was down. No access available, he wasn't able to do it. So he thought to himself, that means one of my kids must have a problem. So all the kids scream out, Shema Yisrael, Shem Lekein, Hashem Echad, and he answered back, Baruch Shem. So asks of Moshe Bick, what does that mean that one of the kids have a mum? And how did you solve that by saying Shema Yisrael? So he explained, he thought that maybe one of his children didn't embody the idea of emes. They didn't realize the idea of being honest. And when they screamed, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Akin, Hashem Echad, Hashem is one, that is the epitome of emes. And therefore he knew that all his children, Taka, shared this midah and afal pik, and Hashem does not want them to give away the idea of when Mashiach is going to come. But Moshe Feinstein in the Sefer Darush, Moshe points out, why is it relevant for us to know the life of Yaakov? So he says, you have to remember, Yaakov lived a very topsy-turvy life. He had many, many high points, and we spoke about this in the past, and many, many low points. Yaakov had a very difficult life. Zotim Moshe Feinstein, throughout the ups and downs of Yaakov Avinu's life, he always was an Eved Hashem through the good and through the bad. Yaakov Avinu had a very difficult life. He was running from his brother. He had a difficult father-in-law. He lost a wife. He lost Rachel, which we'll talk about more in this week's parasha. He lost a son for many years. He had a very, very difficult life. But nonetheless, as Rav Moshe Feinstein, the reason why the Torah tells us his life is to remind us that through all the craziness of Yaakov Avinu's life, he was always steadfast in his Avodas Hashem. He was always steadfast in his Emunah. He never lost faith in the Kosh Baruch Hu. And he was always a Yaakov Ish Tom Yoshev Olim. Rashi tells us the famous Medrash over here. Why is there, if you open up a Sefer Torah, you'll notice that Vayigash and Vayichi flow right into each other. There's no break. Most parashas, there's a break, so you'll know what's a different parasha. But over here, it flows right into it. Why, says Rashi, is Tub Shatim? Well, first let's discuss Rashi's second shot. Rashi tells us, Shebikish Lekalos Es Haketz Levan. If Yaakov Avinu wanted to give away the secret when Mashiach is going to come, he thought now is an appropriate time, as we mentioned from Rav Moshe Bick. He thought now is a good time because now we are able to, if I'm able to live in a place that is so anti-spirituality, so now we're in a good place. And Hashem said no, v'nistam mimenu, it was hidden from him. Why? Why can't you give the secret out? Why can't Yaakov tell us, because you should know, in 1872, in 1770, whatever year it's going to be, Mashiach is going to come, what's the problem? So the Mefarshim says, because if you know and Mashiach is not coming for 300 years, so what are you going to anticipate Mashiach for? If you knew Mashiach is not coming for another 75 years, and you're already 50 years old, so you say to yourself, what am I going to wait for Mashiach for? It's not coming for another 200 years. So Hashem B'davki kept the secret because we don't know when it's going to come. And this way it can come any minute. It can come today, it can come tomorrow, it can come next week. We have a mitzvah to be mitzabel Yeshua. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos that one of the questions we're going to be asked, Achamei V'Esrim, is, were we mitzabel Yeshua? How should I be mitzabel if I know it's never going to happen in my lifetime? If the word would get out that Mashiach is coming in 500 years, so, if someone told me now Mashiach is coming in the year 2052, okay, 20 is not so far away, 50 years. So Mashiach is coming in the year 2100. So forget it, why are you going to waste your time? So if there are B'davka, Kodesh Baruch Hu kept it a secret, so this way we'll have what to anticipate, what to be mitzapah for, what to look forward to, and therefore we'll always think maybe it's coming tomorrow, maybe it's coming next week, and we'll never give up hope. Because I'll tell us that Yaakov Avinu planted the cedarwood trees in Mitzrayim. So this way when Bnei Yisrael leaves, they'll have the wood to be able to build the Aron. So the obvious question is, you know, they could have got wood in the Midbar. Hashem performed a million miracles in the Midbar. The answer was this tree was what they cling to, as that there's going to be a geula. We always need something to hang on to that we're going to eventually get out. So therefore, Yaakov taught them, listen, take the trees, carry the trees with you, cling to these trees. This is the testimonial that you'll get out one day. Because if not, there is nothing to look forward to. All hope is lost when you feel like there's nothing to cling to, nothing to put your trust in, that there'll eventually be an ending to the outcome. Rashi tells us at first pshat that the reason why this parsha is closed is because the shibud began in this week's parsha. So the obvious question is that it's not true. The shibud did not begin. No one ended up working for anyone until after Yosef died, which is not for many years. So what do you mean the shibud started now? So Moshe Feinstein explains that the Bnei Yisrael didn't realize that the shibud really started now. They didn't realize that they don't really have power in Mitzrayim. What reminded them they don't have power? When they realize they can't just freely take Yaakov out and bury him in Eretz Yisrael. The end of the parsha, there's a whole discussion. It wasn't so pashut to get Yaakov out of Mitzrayim. Power wasn't so gung-ho. Says Moshe Feinstein, that was the reminder that you're not a free man. If you'd be a free man in a free land, you could do what you want. Take your body any way you want, bury him however you want. But this was a reminder to the Bnei Yisrael that you're not free yet. Don't think it's peachy rosy here in Mitzrayim. Yaakov's funeral was a reminder that you are not completely in control and you do not have the rights that you think you really have. And this, and Alpert explains in his Sefer that the reason why this parasha is closed is to remind us life is really a closed book. We have no idea where the next turn is going to come and where the next up or down will be. We think, oh, life is a perfect story. There's, you know, a little problem in the beginning and a happy ending and everything works out well. Says Reb Nissen Alpert, this is a metaphor for life. Life is a parsha stuma. Life is a closed book. We never know what's going to happen next. Where's the Yeshua going to come from? Where's the Yerida going to come from? Where's the negative? We don't know anything. And he makes a gavaldic idea. He says, what's the word olam? The word for the world is olam. There's another word in Hebrew that's very similar to it, and that is the word he'alam. That means to be concealed. This world is concealed. We never know. Look where we're holding right now today. Right? Right now today, we don't know if we're going to go to war with Iran, not with Iran. What are they going to blow up? Every day, you never know what's going to be. You wake up in the morning, you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. It's such an amazing world we live in. It's concealed. You don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. Tomorrow could be the best day, the worst day, but you don't know anything. Says Ibn Alper, that's the lesson over here. The lesson over here is that this whole world, our lives, is really a concealed book where we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, and where tomorrow is going to lead us. Nonetheless, we read the parsha. The parsha tells us Yisrael, by Yikrevu Yimei Yisrael Lamus, Yaakov realizes his days are shortened. He knows the end is coming, and he is worried about what's going to happen afterwards. It's not clear in the parsha if he had any form of life insurance policy. Doesn't say it in the psukim, but he had one thing that he was very machmed on. He did not want to be left in Mitzrayim. He wanted out of Mitzrayim, no matter what it cost. Under what circumstances, he's got to get out of Mitzrayim. So what does he do? He calls Yosef. He tells him, "No matzasi chen beinecha." Says, "I'm asking you, please, sim lo yodcha tachas yerechi. I want you to swear to me. I want you to put your hand under your thigh and swear to me." Now, this was a move that he learned from his grandfather. We know that Avraham Avinu wanted Eliezer to swear. So what do you use as a mode of swearing? So today we use the Sefer Torah. But the Gemara says, Mishnah says in Shavuos, that before they had a Sefer Torah, they used something that was beloved to them, and that was the Mila. So Reb Chaim Kanievsky points out in a Sefer that we know Yaakov was Noilad Mahol. Yaakov was born with a Mila. So it's not such a big deal. Avraham Avinu went through Mila, it was a difficult task. He had to cut himself, and he had to do it himself. Yaakov Avinu was born Gemalt. What's the big deal? So Reb Chaim Kanievsky writes, it's still a big deal. Noilad Mahol is also a mitzvah, and therefore he said, I want you to swear. But it's interesting. First, he tells him a personal request. You know, please. I want you to do me a favor. Chesed v'emes. Kindness and just and honesty. Do not bury me in Egypt. What was Yaakov's issue with being buried in Egypt? So we all know Rashi has three classical pshatim. First pshat in Rashi is, because I don't want to eventually become affected by Makas Kinim. That's the first pshat. The kasha on this pshat is that we know Yaakov lived in Goshen. The Medrash tells us that none of the Makas affected Goshen anyways. So what was Yaakov so worried about? Even if he would have been buried in Goshen, the Makas didn't reach to Goshen. So they say this is a right to the Rambam Pirush HaMishnayos. The Rambam writes in Pirush HaMishnayos that Kinim affected Goshen also. Oh, so it's a right. So you see, it's a raya that kinim affected also. What's the second shot? I don't want to be buried in chutz la'aretz because I don't want to have to roll when it's time for a tchias ha-mesim. Second shot. My son came home from school and he must have learned this Rashi. I figured this out afterwards. He starts having a conversation with me. Where are all the dead great-grandparents buried? I figured where we're going with this. So I told him, well, one's here, one's there. He's like, okay. He tells me that he told me he's going to bury me in Eretz Yisrael.
How nice.
I said, thank you so much. You're going to bury me in Eretz Yisrael? I appreciate it. I said, can we talk about it after I die? He said, fine. Then he tells me, he asked me if I'll bury him in Eretz Yisrael.
I said, great-grandfather's buried in Eretz Yisrael.
I said, can we please stop talking about death and move on? Yeah. But this is what they teach little kids in school. Then we have a third pshat in Rashi. What's the third pshat in Rashi? Yeah. We don't want you to make Yaakov into an avodah zarah. So I saw a gevaldik pshat. The first two pshatim were somewhat personal to Yaakov. I don't want my body to be affected by kinim, and I don't want my body to roll. That's pshat in the pasuk. Vasisi imadi chesed. Doing that would be a kindness to me. What's the third pshat in Rashi? The third pshat in Rashi is I don't want you to turn me into an avodah zarah. That's emes. That would be a busha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's emes. Honesty means there's no avodah zarah. So the first two ideas were chesed. That's a favor for me. The last pshat was emes. That was for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory that you don't make me into an avodah zarah. The Medrash has two other pshatim. Fascinating pshatim to why Yaakov demanded not to be buried in Mitzrayim. Yaakov, the Medrash says, because what's going to happen when I'm buried in Mitzrayim and the makas break out? Said the Medrash, the Mitzrayim are going to flock to my kevin, they're going to daven, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be put in a pickle. If Hashem answers their tefillahs, that's going to backfire. And if Hashem doesn't answer the tefillahs, it's going to be a chil Hashem. People are going to say, oh, Yaakov's not worth anything. So Yaakov even said, in order to ensure I don't violate chil Hashem, get me out of here. In the last chapter, the Medrash says, Yaakov tells Yosef, do you know why you're going to get me out of here? Because it's your fault I'm here in the first place. Because when you became king, you said, Dad, you got to come down to Mitzrayim. If you think about it, you read last week's parasha, it's a shtuk of chutzpah. Yosef tells Yaakov, Dad, you got to come to me. No, you go to Dad. Oh, you can't because you have a job. Okay, I understand. So says the Medrash, Yaakov tells Yosef, I didn't want to come here in the first place. I wanted to stay in Eretz Yisrael. I waited my whole life to get to Eretz Yisrael. But because you have a job and I have to go where you are, so now I'm here. Now that I'm here because of you, you better make sure I get out of here. So writes the Medrash in Yaakov's demand to leave Mitzrayim. So we know that he tells him, I want to get out of here. And he tells him, please get me out of here. And what does he tell him? No problem, Dad. Your wish is my command. But Yaakov says, thank you, son, but I want you to swear. I don't get it. He's your son, gave you the word. But Dad says, no, I need a shvuah. You don't trust your son? So the Mefarshim all point out, no, not that he didn't trust him, but we all know that a word is good, one's word is very good, until things get complicated. And Yaakov knew, Yosef says, yes, Dad, or whatever you say, Dad. And then what's going to happen? Paro says, absolutely not, you're not leaving the country. What's he supposed to do? I gave my dad a word. So Paro said, well, too bad. Yaakov said, let me swear. If I make a shvuah, that's legally binding. So then perhaps, no matter what comes down my way, whatever issue comes up, I'm legally bound by doing it. This way, either Pare will let me, or I won't find excuses not to do it. And that's why he made him swear to ensure that it actually gets done. So what does he tell him? I want to rest with my fathers. So the Medrash and other Mefarshim point out, it's an interesting choice of words. What do you mean, v'shachafti? Shouldn't he said, and I want to be buried? What's the lashon shechiva? Shechiva means to rest. So the Mefarshim point out, this is a reference to Tchias HaMesim. Shechafti means I'm only going to be resting there, because I'm not staying there, because we have Tchias HaMesim. Secondly, I'm sorry, Shachav means to rest, because we know Chazal tells Yaakov Avinu Lo Yimeis. Yaakov never really died. Famous Gemara in Tainus, Yaakov Avinu Lo Yimeis. So Shechafti means put me to the rest, because I'm not really dead. And then he writes, Ukvartani, with my fathers, even with your fathers. Because when a person dies, he doesn't really die. His body dies. His neshama lives with the previous generations. So this is a reference to the idea of continuing life, of Tchias HaMesim, where a person goes and he will continue to live after death and come back and return one day later. So what does he tell him? I will do whatever you say, Dad. There's a gevaldik medrash in this week's parasha. The medrash tells us, we learn from here that kol ha-mechaber avoysof, anyone that honors their parents, moichlin loy akol avoynoysof. A ticket out of all your averis is kibud avayim. Where do you learn it? Says the Medrash, because it says in the pasuk, anochi esek kidvarecha. Where else do we find the word kidvarecha? Salachti kidvarecha. Says the Medrash, do you know why we finally got slicha v'kapar from the Chet Egel? Bezchus Yosef's kibbut of Eim in this week's parsha is why we merited to get slicha v'kapar from the Chet Egel. Therefore, says the Medrash, you see from here, ad heichem agia, how far does it go? The importance of being mechabed one's parents, it gives you slicha v'kapar. There's a Zohar in Parshas Bechukosai. The Zohar writes in Parshas Bechukosai, the greatest chus that a person can do to honor his parents is living a Torah life. That is the greatest. The Zohar writes that when a person lives a Torah life, he saves his parents from different things in Olam HaEmes. It's the greatest thing you can do. The greatest gift of being mechabed one's parents after they die, which the Gemara says one is obligated, is living a Torah life. When a person lives a Torah life, he's shame a Torah mitzvahs, he doesn't realize the wonderful, terrific things he's doing for his parents in the next world. He's getting them out of difficult situations, he's getting them out of Gehenim, he's moving them places up in Gan Eden, the Zohar says. He moves them around in Gan Eden. Person moves around in Gan Eden. Gets better seats, right? There's box seats, there's box seats, you know, there's better seats. Better heating, better air conditioning, right? How do you get them to be moved? Says the Zohar, by keeping Torah mitzvahs. The more you learn Torah, the more you do mitzvahs, you move their ranking, and that is the greatest kibbutz of aim that a person can do for their parents in the next, while they're in the next world, we can get them to a better place. So what does the Pasuk tell us? Pasuk tells us later on, Vayhi acher advar me'el, was after this event, Vayoymer li Yosef, it was told to Yosef, Hinei avicha chole. Yosef got an email that dad is sick. What do you mean it was told to Yosef? So the Medrash tells us that Yosef did not live anywhere near his father. Yosef lived in Mitzrayim. Eretz Goshen was north of Mitzrayim. Far away. Asks the Medrash, I don't understand. Yaakov and Yosef were very close. For 17 years, they were best of pals. They got separated, and now they got reunited. Wouldn't you thought that Yosef would have built a wing in the palace for Yaakov to live in? So they can get back to learning, they can spend catch up on the lost time, he could spend time with Ephraim and Menashe. Yet the Medrash says no. Yaakov was so far away from his father, he didn't even know his father was sick, he had to get an email. What's going on over here? So the Medrash tells us that Yaakov Avinu was Moser Nefesh to not be near his father. Why? Because we know Yaakov Avinu had a pact that we're never going to tell dad what happened with my selling. And Yaakov Avinu said to himself, if dad lives right near me in the wing and we spend supper together and we eat meals together, it's bound to happen. In one of our conversations, dad's going to be like, hey, Yosef, by the way, what happened with you and your brothers? And Yosef was going to slip. And he didn't want to rout out his brothers. It's an amazing Mesiras Nefesh. That's giving up one's own personal wants and desires for someone else. And who's the someone else? His brothers. And what relationship did he have with his brothers? Wasn't perfect. Wasn't great. That's Mesiras Nefesh for doing what you think is right. And there was a pact, Chazal tells us, there was a cherem. And no one was allowed to reveal the secret. And therefore, he bedavka did not live near his father. He bedavka lived further away from his father. And this way, he'll never know. Yaakov will never find out. Rashi told us in the pasuk before that after Yaakov agrees and Yosef agrees and swears to his father that he's not going to, that he's going to bury him in Eretz Yisrael, Vayishtachv Yisrael al Rosh Hamitah. Yisrael, Yaakov bows down. So Rashi says, what was this about? Rashi says, Al shahoysa mita shalem of Elohim barasha. This was Yaakov's way of saying, thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have 12 perfect children. Why? Sharei Yosef melechaya. Because Yosef was the wild card. Yaakov didn't know how Yosef was going to turn out. The rest of them, we know they grew up with me in Eretz Canaan. I was raising them, I was involved. I saw all my children turned out perfect. Yeah, Shimon and Levi were a little bit more wild, but I saw the way it went down. But I didn't know how Yosef was going to turn out. But now I see. Now I see, says Rashi, that he's Taka a Tzaddik. Asks Reb Chaim Kanevsky, asks Reb Hanach Leibowitz, now? They've been together for 17 years. Only now you realize he's a Tzaddik? So Reb Chaim Kanevsky says, based on what we just said, yes. Because they never really spent any quality time together. This was the first time they spent any quality time together when Yaakov was already on his deathbed. Why? Because Yosef made sure never to spend alone time with dad, lest he accidentally give it away. That's Reb Chaim Kanevsky's pshat. Says Reb Hanach Leibowitz, no, that's not the pshat. You know what the pshat is? How do you tell if someone's a real tzaddik? Not how long his Shemoneh Esrei is, not even how many hours he learns. When he's asked to do a ben odom lechaveri thing, which is complicated. When you put him out there and say, I need a big favor from you. I need you to go to the store and do this, and do that. That's when you see someone's real tzidkus. Says Reb Hanach, the way you saw Yosef's real tzidkus, when Yaakov really put him out and said, I'm asking you something which is going to go really out of your comfort zone, and it's a ben adam lechaver. I'm not asking you to daven, you know, three Shemoneh Esrei. I'm not asking you to learn for 12 hours straight. I'm asking you to go out of your way for a Bein Adam L'Chaver. That's a giloy on your Bein Adam L'Makim as well. That's what Reb Hanach explains. When you see a person's Bein Adam L'Makim, a Bein Adam L'Chaver, is so far reached that it's putting him, twisting him into a pretzel, getting him out of his comfort zone, that's a rai that he has real Bein Adam L'Makim also. Very powerful idea. Very often we see people and we see they have beautiful Bein Adam L'Makim, but the Bein Adam L'Chaver is lousy. Then they're not a full tzaddik. A full rounded tzaddik is defined and perhaps clearly shown through his Bein Adam L'Chaver when he's put out in a difficult situation. So what happens? Pasuk tells us that he's sick and Yosef realizes this is my last chance. If Yaakov's going to die, I want my kids to get a blessing before he dies. He grabs the kids and says, guys, road trip, we're going to see grandpa, let's go. He takes Ephraim and Menashe with him. So Yaakov gets word that Yosef is coming. And Yaakov again finds the strength, sick man lying in bed, to somehow stand up. So the question is, why is Yaakov doing this? So Rashi says, to show cover for the melech. The Rishonim say a different reason, because he's about to give a bracha. We don't want anyone to think that this bracha was out of a shchiv meira. We know shchiv meira, someone's about to die, so we don't really take so seriously what he's about to say. Yaakov said, no, I'm still all here. Don't knock me out yet. I'm well, I'm still rocking, I'm still kicking. I'm ready to give brachas, I'm ready to do what I have to do. So what happens? He starts off with a very, very non-connected drasha. He says, you should know, Yaakov, Hashem appeared to me, Hashem blessed me, Hashem told me I'm going to have a lot of children, and your two children are going to be Keruvim, Mishim, and Yuli. Although they're the second generation, I view them as the first generation. And then he starts telling him about his mother's passing. You should know that, you know, when mom died, it was on the road, and we buried her on the side of the road, and okay, now I'm ready to give you a bracha. What is going on over here? So Rashi explains what's going on over here. See, Yaakov says to Yosef, I don't want you to think that it's really not right what I just did. I demanded of you to give me a proper burial, but of your mother, I didn't do that. I just plopped her down wherever I was. I put her down where, you know, okay, here's a good place. Let's put mom over here. I'm telling you, Hashem told me to bury her. I would have loved to bring her to the Maariv of Machpelah. I would have loved to bury her in a beautiful matzeva and a beautiful, but Hashem told me this is where she should go. Why? Because we all know the famous Medrash. Medrash tells us that when the Churban came, and Klai Yisrael was kicked out, so everyone passed by Rachel to daven. But the Medrash tells us that when right before the Golos began, all of our greatest leaders came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and pleaded. Avram came to plead, and Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Moshe. They all said, Hashem, please don't do this. Hashem said, I'm not listening to you. The only person that was able to stir an emotion in HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Rachel. Rachel came to Hashem and said, Hashem, I went through much worse. I gave up much more for my children. You can do it also. Hashem said, you're right, Rachel. They'll come back. 70 years later, they'll come back. Rachel had the ability to stir an emotion in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that not even Moshe Rabbeinu could. The great Moshe Rabbeinu, the Navi that no other Navi, the Messiah HaTorah. Rachel. I always quote this message when I speak in Tag and other girls' schools. Don't underestimate the powers of a woman. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't stir HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Rachel Imeinu could. Look at that. Who really carries the power when it comes to the world of tefillos? Rachel is mevaka. Her ability to cry beyond Moshe, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov's ability to move HaKadosh Baruch. And that's what he was telling over here. Don't underestimate the ability of a woman. But secondly, there's another lesson over here. You know what Yaakov's telling Yosef? He says, yeah, you understand what I did? I knew that I can't come back to Eretz Yisrael married to these two sisters, because it's prohibited. I have to keep the mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael. I basically went into a country knowing I'm going to lose one of my wives, because that's how much I love Eretz Yisrael. I'm teaching you what it means to be moiser nefesh for Torah. I was moiser nefesh. I lost a wife on the deal, because I knew good and well that one of them are going to die. And I did it anyways. That's what it means to be dedicated and devoted, to be moiser nefesh, to being part of Am Yisrael. That's what he was telling him in this idea, in this lesson over here. And then we have the whole idea over here of Ephraim and Menashe, the whole significance of Ephraim and Menashe. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about over here. So Pasuk tells us, "Vaya Yisrael es bnei Yosef." Yaakov sees the children of Yosef. The Rabbeinu Bechaya points out in this week's parsha, we've spoken about it in the past, what's with this change between the Yaakov name and the Yisrael name? What's his name? His name Yaakov, his name Yisrael. So Rabbeinu Bechaya says the name Yaakov is whenever you're dealing with mili de alma, gashmias, things that are not of natural, things that are not that are not really spiritual, you're going to find the word Yaakov. Why? Because where's the word Yaakov come? The Yaakveni, he grabbed onto the Ekev, and he grabbed onto the heel. That's not a spiritual thing. The word Yisrael was when he fought with the Malach, that's spirituality. So you'll find the name Yisrael whenever dealing with spirituality. That's Rabbeinu Bechaya's definition of when it's Yaakov, when it's Yisrael. So what is he? He sees these kids. But Yerim, he says, Miela, who are these kids? Clearly he didn't have an intimate relationship with Ephraim and Menashe. He says who they were. So Rashi tells us that he saw somewhere there's some shemitz of psul. Now, it wasn't Ephraim and Menashe, it was much later on with Yeravam, the future generations. They're my kids. So the Chavetz Chaim says, you know what Yaakov Yosef told his father? Banayhem. I was mechanech them. They have my Mesira, our Mesira, they're my kids. Yaakov says, oh, bring him here, I'm going to give him a bracha. Banayhem means I am testifying, Yaakov, that they're mine. I instilled in them the Mesira that I got from you and I got from your grandfather. They're mine. I was mechanech them, says the Chavetz Chaim. That's what banayhem means. Not that it's just biologically my children, DNA-wise, but I raised them. I taught them, and I taught them midos, and I taught them Torah. So then Yaakov says, oh, if that's the case, bring them right over here. I'm going to give them a bracha. You know, the famous Rashi says that Yaakov was skeptical, therefore he brings him the Shtar Erisin. He shows him his his marriage license, and it says over there that everything is good. So the obvious question is that on the Shtar Erisin, it doesn't say whether or not his wife is Kasher or Pasul, it just says what her name is. So the Menachas Yitzchak writes, because what you write on a Shtar Erisin or Shtar Ksuba, you write the real name. We know his wife was Osnas. Osnas is really Basdina, but no one knew that. But when you write a legal document, you got to write her real name. So on the legal document, it said her real name. So Yaakov said, oh, that's my granddaughter. Said, okay, good, no problem. I'll give them a brach. But look what he does over here. Fascinating pasuk. He brings them over. He hugs them and he kisses them. What was that about? No brach yet. He hugs them and he kisses them. So I saw brought down a beautiful idea over here. Yaakov is teaching us how to deal with your grandchildren. You know what you do? You give them a hug, you give them a kiss. That's it. You don't do anything more. That show them affection and love. That's what you do for your grandchildren. Unadulterated, without any conditions. Right? With your kids, it's more complicated. You know, I'll hug you now, but I know in a minute you're going to run around and make trouble. So it's complicated. With grandparents, it's no, just here. You're my grandchild, I'm going to hug and kiss you because you are my grandchild. No reasons, no questions, nothing else involved. It's a beautiful message that Yaakov taught us of how to interact with one's grandchildren. But the Hafla writes that we see later on he's going to put his hands on their head. What's the significance of putting his hands on their head? So the Hafla writes because they weren't really deserving of it because of the future generations. But he infused in them, he put his hands on them to say, you know what, I'm going to make you a base kibble. I'm going to give the brachas to you, perhaps even though there's going to be trouble later on, but because you're my grandchildren, I love you, I'm going to give it to you anyways. That's the love that Yaakov Avinu showed to his grandchildren, and therefore for future generations taught us how to have such a relationship. And we know the famous story over here about the switching of the hands. What does Ephraim and Menashe represent? So there are many different interpretations of what each Ephraim and Menashe represents. Ephraim represents Torah. Rashi tells us Ephraim used to hang out by Yaakov. What does Menashe represent? So many people say Menashe represents working. Yeah, Ephraim was kulei Torah, and Menashe was working. He worked in the government, he worked in politics. And Yaakov was teaching us that they're both very good options to spend your day. And they're both very nice jobs for Jewish people. But Ephraim went first, because Lamaisa, we think Torah goes first. Yes, a person has to work, a person has to have a job, all very important. But the most important thing is Torah. That's why Yaakov's hand goes first on Ephraim, and then on Menashe. The other way I like to say it is Ephraim represents Torah, and Menashe represents Avoida, davening. Yaakov Avinu is giving us such a powerful lesson. The tool to survival in the Golos is Torah, and then Tefillah. What does that mean? It means don't just build shuls. History has shown us that when we only build shuls, Klal Yisrael does not continue. Avoida represents Tefillah. You gotta have yeshivas. Judaism in America did not begin to take off until we started building yeshivas. We had shuls for hundreds of years. It wasn't until we had yeshivas where we had Torah being taught and being given over to where we continued the legacy of European Jewry. And that's what Yaakov is teaching us with the right hand over the left hand. that the Torah is represented by Ephraim and the Avodah is Tefillah by Menashe, we got to put the Torah first. But we all know, Rashi tells in this week's parasha, that the bracha that is given for Doirei Doiris is Yisimcha Lekim Ke Ephraim and Menashe. We want our children to be like Ephraim and Menashe. What is so special about Ephraim and Menashe? The answer is that if there were ever two brothers that could have had sibling rivalry, it would be Ephraim and Menashe. After this little story, Menashe was the older brother. Menashe could have turned to Ephraim and said, "What a bum. You stole my bracha. Grandpa gave it to you and not me. A chutzpah." But Ephraim and Menashe were so in tune to their jobs and their purposes in this world, there was no hatred, there was no fighting. Ephraim said, "Okay." Menashe said, "Yeah, I get it. I'm supposed to do this, you're supposed to do this." No sibling rivalry. The bracha we give to our children is that there should be no sibling rivalry. We should all get along and appreciate our job and our purpose in society. No need for fighting. That's why it's Yisimcha Lekim Ke Ephraim Lecha Menashe. We want all our children to realize you're special and you're special and you're both special. You're doing your thing. You're the politician. You're the rabbi. You're the avoida. You're the whatever it is. We love you equally and you're each special and there's no reason for fights. We find similar with Yisroch and Zvulun later on this week's parasha. Yisroch and Zvulun were very different roles. Zvulun represents the what we call the Machzikei HaTorah, Yisachar represents the Loimdei Torah, and they live in a perfect harmony. Because in life we all have different roles, and we should live in harmony. And Yaakovinu taught us that Mashiach is not going to come until we all realize our roles. We all have different roles in society. We all have different roles in our family lives, in our personal lives, in our communal lives. And until we realize our roles, Mashiach is never going to come. Until we realize that each one of us have a specific tafkid to do, we are never going to get out of this very long gulf. And that's what he was teaching us. That the idea of Ephraim and Menashe is there's no reason to have sibling rivalry. But Yaakov Kamenetsky takes it one step further. Yaakov Kamenetsky asks, he says, "I don't understand, what was Yaakov thinking? Yaakov, you know that there is a problem in this family of fights amongst the siblings. What do you think Reuven and Shimon felt like when they're watching what's going on over here? All of a sudden, they all had kids. Reuven and Shimon, they all had kids. And all of a sudden, this favoritism being shown to the grandchildren." Says Yaakov Kamenetsky, such a powerful idea. Yaakov knew Ephraim and Menashe needed a little extra TLC. Why? Because they're being raised in Mitzrayim. Reuven's kids and Shimon's kids, they'll be fine. They were raised in Eretz Canaan. They went to the best yeshivas. They were in the best community. But look where Ephraim and Menashe are being raised. Yaakov knew that they needed extra and the brothers would not be upset about it. And he takes it even a step further. He says Ephraim needed it even more than Menashe. Why? Because Ephraim, he writes over here, Ephraim was the second to be born. What was Ephraim's name? Ki Ephrani Elikim. What was Menashe's name? Because till Menashe was born, Yaakov still remembered the Alta Haim. He still remembered what it means to live back in Eretz Canaan. By the time Ephraim was born, that was old news. Ephraim needed extra TLC. Says Yaakov Kamenetsky, when a grandparent or a parent shows extra affection because one child needs it more than the other, that's not sibling rivalry. Because they understand what it's about. They understand what's coming for. That's okay. If everyone understands that one is going through a difficult time, they need a little bit more extra care, no one gets insulted. It's a very powerful lesson in Chinuch. And we'll just close with this, even though, again, we didn't get through quarter of what we're supposed to get to, but there's a Gevaldik of Medrash in this week's parasha. The Medrash tells us that Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, hey, two more parts. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi were zeichet to be on the Urim V'tumim. Why? Because they took Musar from their father. In this week's parasha, Reuven and Shimon and Levi, they get it over the head. And we live in a generation where no one likes to get rebuked. No one ever likes to be told they're wrong. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi took it, and they took it well. And they were zeichet to be on the Urim V'Tumim for that reason. It's such an important lesson. No one ever likes it. But you're never going to improve if no one does it in a loving way. Of course, you don't like to be yelled at. No one likes to be screamed at. But sometimes we need to be pointed out the flaws that we make. And therefore, since Reuven and Shimon and Levi took it well, they didn't yell back at Yaakov. They didn't storm out at Yaakov. They didn't start, you know, throwing insults back to Yaakov. They took it. They said, "Yes, Dad, you're right. We were a little hot-headed and we were a little too quick." That was the greatest thing that they could have had, and that's what they were zechet over to. And Reb Koppelman will close with this. Says Reb Koppelman, why is this called Birchas Yaakov? The first three brothers don't get any bracha. They get slammed. Reuven gets slammed, and Shimon Levi gets slammed. What's the bracha? Says Reb Koppelman, sometimes in life you need to be told, you're not good at this. What did Yaakov tell Reuven? Reuven, you're going to be a really lousy king. You're going to be a really lousy kohen. You're too quick. You don't have enough compassion. This job is not right for you. Shimon and Levi, you guys are too hot-headed. You got to calm down. Therefore, you're going to have to do this job and that job. Sometimes in life, being told what you're not good at is the biggest blessing in the world. There are people that do jobs they have no business doing. They're just not good at it. You're not good at that. And sometimes when someone points it out to you, it's not a klal, it's a bracha. This is not the industry you should be in. You're not the right personality for this industry. You're not good at this. Do something else. So when Yaakov pointed out to his sons the mistakes that they had, their flaws, he was giving them the bracha of finding what they should do with their life. Rashi tells us, Shimon and Levi, Shimon became a Rebbe. Why? Because as Yaakov Kamenetsky explains, you have such compassion, but you're a little too much. You're a little all over the place. So you become a Rebbe, it will ground you. Levi, you're too quick to judge. You'll become someone that's needed by, you'll be supported by the community. When you're supported by the community, you'll be that much more careful in how you treat the community. Yaakov Avinu was so wise in understanding his children. He knew what they should do and what they shouldn't do. Sometimes a parent has to tell his child, you think you're not going to be a good doctor. I know you. I know how you work. You don't have the work ethic for it. You don't have the zitzleish. Medical school is not for you. And that's the biggest bruch. In order for this to work, the parents have to know their children or know their grandchildren, and the parents have to be able to give it over in a way where it's respected and loved, and this way you're able to realize your role, your personal role, your communal role, and be able to be the most productive you can be for yourself and for the greater Klal Yisrael.